As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
4 weeks on from being docked 10 points for breaking the Premier League's profitability and sustainability rules, Everton are a team on a mission.
To rub salt into the home side's wounds.
So after four consecutive wins, are Sean Dyche's side out of trouble just yet? Well, let's find out. I'm Joachim Mulere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. Alongside me to talk about Everton and their resurgence, we have The Athletic's Everton writer Patrick Boyland, Jacob Whitehead as well, and obviously David Ornstein. Right, let's take this back, Patrick. Let's take this back to where Everton are, because it probably says a lot, really, that we're talking about the other Liverpool team, considering there was a massive game against Liverpool and Manchester United, and Everton are the ones who are making the headlines on a Monday. This resurgence under Sean Dyche is quite remarkable.
I think so. I mean, part of my match piece after Saturday's latest win against Burnley was just going through all the milestones they're ticking off, and the statistics get more incredible with each passing week. 10 wins in the last 14, would be four ahead of Chelsea without the points deduction, level with Brighton. Jordan Pickford with the most clean sheets in the league now among any goalkeeper. And I think it just goes to show the job that Sean Dyche has done to stabilise Everton. Let's not forget that last season and the season before, this was a relegation-threatened squad. A lot of people would have expected similar this season, even without taking into account the points deduction. And of course, you could argue that it's a good year to have this. If you're going to get a 10-points deduction, it should happen when there's teams like Sheffield United and Burnley and Luton performing historically poorly. But you have to also give a huge amount of credit to Dyche for getting a tune out of his players, to the squad for coming out of what was a substantial blow and emerging even stronger. And I suppose as well to the fans for what they've done in helping galvanise and unite. As I think I've said a few times now, that Everton feels, as a club, feels as united as it has done for a long time. And part of that is the sense of injustice, the sense of kind of the disproportionate nature of the points deduction and the penalty imposed upon them. They've come out fighting, and I'm sure they'll continue to keep on fighting.
Yeah, do you get a sense of this sort of siege mentality, Jacob, that, you know, the fans and players are aligned in, actually, this is a sense of injustice. We are going to fight this on the pitch, and actually, this is where we rightfully should be.
I mean, historically, and Paddy will know this well, kind of defiance has always been part of the Everton identity. Some of it comes from the city and history there, and some of it also comes from it's self-styled. I mean, kind of they're known as the Dogs of War, and that kind of gets into the defiance of it. And so when you have all of this kind of history coming together, as well as kind of a modern reason why you can unite behind that, because this is a club who's been looking for something to unite behind for a while, and who is possibly in the last 5 to 10 years has drifted in terms of identity a little bit, it's been a spur to actually get lots of that back.
David, 12 points from their last four games has basically wiped out that 10-point deduction. Are you surprised by how quickly this turnaround has been?
I'm actually not. I've spent a lot of time around Everton, like Paddy, been at many of the games. And there's enough quality at that club for a start in terms of the playing staff and the personnel. They were largely, you could say, underachieving prior. We saw flashes in the past. My mind immediately thinks back to Everton's surprise win at Brighton last season when Dwight McNeil scored twice. When you look at the other teams who you would expect to be battling towards the bottom of the table this season, with all due respect to them, the likes of Sheffield United and Luton, maybe Burnley and a few others, Everton, man for man, are of a superior level. And then you look at the manager, Sean Dyche. He's been in scraps before. He's normally been successful in them and led his teams, Burnley mainly, but also Everton last season, upwards. He's brilliant at organising and crucially at uniting a team and galvanising, and they had a common cause. And it's really quite extraordinary that we're seeing a better Everton now than we have at any time in recent years. It's almost like they needed this in a way, and of course they wouldn't have wanted it and feel it's unfair, but they're showing the sort of pedigree that I think they would have liked to have been showing in a way that sort of got them into this mess. You know, Farhad Moshiri put huge money into this Everton project at the start of his ownership in the hope that it would lead them to better times in the future, European football, bigger revenues, a more sustainable model that meant he wouldn't have to invest as much going forward and that the books would be balanced. But they didn't deliver. Ironically, that the club has found itself punished and now they are delivering, and hats off to them. I mean, the Premier League's inform, or one of the most informed teams right now. And it seems that whatever you throw at them on and off the pitch with the fan base and the players, the staff, the executives, it seems to have given them a common cause to fight in a way that Everton fans have been waiting for many years and would have hoped it hadn't come to this before doing so.
Well, you talk about it being one of the Premier League's most informed sides at this moment. Had it not been for the points deduction, Everton would actually be sitting 2 points off seventh place and firmly in the battle for European qualification. That's actual madness. So look into how Dyche has got Everton performing despite their off-pitch uncertainty. Here's Mark Carey.
Everton are one of the most informed teams in the Premier League at the moment, and their recent run does not look to be by luck. Before we speak about their attack, it's clear that their performances are based on a solid defensive foundation, and the numbers highlight just how much this is the case. So, only Manchester City and Arsenal average lower than Everton's 1.1 expected goals conceded per 90, which suggests that they're not giving away too many opportunities in their own box, and that carried on at the weekend despite their personnel change against Burnley. At the other end, we know how strong Everton are from set pieces, 24% of their total shots coming from dead ball situations, and if we look at just how efficient they are from those set pieces, the numbers really stand out again. So, Sean Dyche's side are currently averaging 9.2 goals per 100 set pieces, which is comfortably higher than any side in the Premier League when you adjust for that equal opportunity to score.
A Burnley man with the corner kick. Trafford's second best of that one. And Everton have scored. And Amadou Onana was the man who got there.
One of their key set-piece takers, Dwight McNeil, has been in fine form this season as well. So his 4.2 expected assists, which measure the expected goals value of the shot that is assisted, is the highest of any Everton player in the squad. And on a personal level, his creativity is as high as it's ever been. So a return of 0.34 expected assists per 90 from McNeil is comfortably the highest rate of his career so far, and it feels as if he's playing his best football since he joined Everton for sure. And from an Everton perspective, they'll surely be hoping that this run continues, and the numbers suggest they have every chance of that happening.
You know, I was just thinking about Dominic Calvert-Lewin and how influential a player he's been for Everton. But because he's been injured, Sean Dyche has had to figure out ways of playing this team more effectively. And, you know, there's been so much uncertainty about how much football he can play in a season. Now, this is a masterful stroke, I think. And I sometimes don't feel Sean Dyche gets the credit he deserves in terms of tactical mobility. What do you think to that, Jacob?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is not, and both me and Paddy have written about this, this is not just a team who play kind of almost what the cliche of Burnley football was. They don't just lump it long. They are creative against sort of against Newcastle, the third goal was a 29 pass flowing move. Key to this, to Dyche's system generally, is verticality and getting the ball forward quickly. That is not inherently an ugly form of football at all. Everton have the highest direct speed of any team in the Premier League in terms of moving it towards the opponent's goal. And that leads to really, really nice transitional football often. And they have players such as Decore, such as McNeil, such as Jack Harrison, who really like basically turning their shoulders as early as possible. And in Calvert-Lewin, you've got the perfect striker to complement that in terms of he can both play as a hold-up player and bring others into play to go past him, but he also has the speed to stretch defences himself and create that verticality with his own legs.
I think one of the things that really occurs to me when you watch Dyche's Everton right now is that there's an identity here, a really strongly defined playing identity, which helps everything at the club. You look at the recruitment team, previous directors of football, previous heads of recruitment will have looked at Everton and the various managers, the various succession of managers over the years, and I suppose wondered, what are we recruiting for? What's the style of play? Is it a Carlo Ancelotti style, Marco Silva, Sam Allardyce, Ronald Koeman? All of these guys with distinctly different ways of playing. But you know what Dyche, in the main, the framework from which Dyche is going to work, what he wants. And I think that makes it a lot easier to pinpoint players that can come in and do a job within this system. I think kind of under the radar, but one of the most important pieces of business they did over the summer was the loan signing of Jack Harrison from Leeds. Him and McNeil are like the archetypal Dyche wingers, the wide midfielders, put a real shift in off the ball, but have those moments of quality in games, particularly from either set pieces or kind of crosses to make a difference. Everything's geared towards getting Dominic Calvert-Lewin or Beto into the game. And then you've got the third man runs of Decore from midfield. And he's probably the most important player within the whole setup because of what he does both off the ball and on it. No midfielder, as of last weekend, no midfielder has scored more non-penalty goals in the league than him since Dyche took charge. And this was a midfielder at Watford whose best football largely came as a number eight. So to see him thriving in the number 10 or split striker role is rather remarkable. I think that strikes at the heart of what Jacob is saying, in that Dyche is pigeonholed, and some of the kind of the well-trotted out stereotypes are there, the reliance on set pieces, the strength from set pieces, the defensive solidity, all those kind of things. But there is much more to it than just that. I mean, watch some of what Dwight McNeil does, for example, at times where he drifts inside into the number 10 position to create. Watch some of the transitional football, some of the passing moves when the game opens up. Dyche would always tell you there's more than meets the eye to his style. But I know from very early on, people at the club were saying that as well. And one of the funnier things that I think I've written in a recent piece, somebody said to me, if you gave him a German accent and put a baseball cap on, he's a Red Bull manager, he's a top manager. Obviously, he's the short-haired ginger guy with a gruff voice from Kettering. So it's quite difficult to make those comparisons. But he's doing an amazing job. Hats off to him.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Is it time we reserved a bit of praise for the recruitment, because Everton have been battered? And I'm not just saying the current incumbents, although it does appear that Kevin Thirlwell and his team on the Sporting side, in conjunction with Sean Dyche, of course, have done outstanding work that is now sort of being seen, still relatively baby steps. But even those who have been battered in the past, who have held their positions, and when you look at the team that did away with Burnley, you know, players like Pickford and Keane, Tarkowski, and that there's a bit of a British core there. But even those that they have bought in, Premier League experience in Doucouré, a bit of a gamble in Onana. But I remember when he was signed that he was being heralded. And even Harrison, a bit of a shrewd deal from Leeds with their relegation, taking advantage of that. And James Garner, you know, polishing sort of gems that have maybe been discarded by the biggest club, say Manchester United, but Sean at Nottingham Forest, and seeing those opportunities in the market. Beto's played a little role so far, and let's see how others, because, you know, when you've got somebody of the quality of Danjuma who played Champions League football for Villarreal and excelled and was at Tottenham last season, not getting in the team, then you see there's some quality and some competitiveness and some depth for the first time in a long time. And what I'm also seeing, and I'm sure we'll come on to speak about this, is a bit of value in the squad for the first time in a while. Now, they have sold the Gordons and the Richarlisons of this world, but perhaps they were sort of a one-off and Everton cashed in. But there are players across the board now where you look, and if things got a little bit difficult, Branthwaite immediately springs to mind as being a great asset who Everton will hope to keep hold of, but they could, if needed, when people are talking about their financial situation, cash in quite spectacularly. That was a great piece of recruitment by the previous regime. And Onana is constantly being looked at by the biggest clubs as an option, maybe not at the very top of their list in the midfield role. And Jimmy Garner, I do think is, you know, Gareth Southgate was at the recent Everton home game, and there were reports that immediately came out that he was looking at Dominic Calvert-Lewin and others. I've heard that he thinks very highly of James Garner, and that's actually a position that England aren't particularly blessed in. His best role is maybe that number six, even though he's been pushed wide a little bit for Everton. So the guys have outlined really well the sort of statistical and data side and areas of play that I can't even get my head around. But I just think from a value perspective, we should give Everton a bit more credit than they've received in recent times.
I think there's two things here. One is Dyche's work improving the existing resources within the squad. So there you talk about the improvement at Doucouré, giving a pathway to Jarrad Branthwaite. Obviously, Everton lost a couple of centre-halves in Yerry Mina and Connor Cody over the summer. And there was a bit of clamour for Mina in particular to be replaced, given how important he was at the end of last season. But Dyche and Kevin Thelwell, the director of football, they decided that they felt Branthwaite had sufficient potential to push on and to be that long-term replacement for Yerry Mina. David talks about Gareth Southgate being at Everton's games of late. I actually think that Jarrad Branthwaite, of all the players, is the one that has the real opportunity here, because England aren't overly blessed, overly stocked at centre-back. There's obviously a bit of debate about Harry Maguire and various others. Branthwaite seems to just have just about everything you would want from a modern-day centre-half, in that he's 6'4", he's quick across the ground. He can play out on his left foot, which is obviously an important commodity. So there's been an element of improving resources and maximising pathways. But then also, to David's other point, the recruitment has had to be done on a shoestring budget. Everton have reined in costs now over an extended period of time in an attempt to comply with FFP. Obviously, they were found in breach for 21-22, but they have reduced costs significantly. There's been lots of key outgoings. They've not been able to replace like for like. It hasn't been a case of 60 million comes in for Richarlison, here's 60 million to spend on a replacement. As we've reported, Everton have often done their deals in a way where deals are structured over an extended period of time in instalments. Last summer, they didn't even pay. The only fee they paid, was the loan fee for Arno Danjuma. Everything else is deferred for another year. So effectively, bringing in a Jack Harrison, Danjuma, even though he's not played, Beto and various others, doing that on the confines, in the confines of Everton's position. I think it does go to show that the work that's been done by people other than Sean Dyche at Everton as well, it's been a truly collective effort from everybody. And I think that's why they're succeeding at the moment, because there is that sense of unity.
Just to pick up on that, I remember last January, Kevin Thelwell was under a lot of pressure because Everton hadn't spent any money in the January window, at a point where the club were really in difficulty in the league table. They kind of wanted to buy a couple of players, but when they weren't available, they resisted the urge to just go and buy for buying's sake. And now you can see that when there's a squad where the correct pathways exist, who may, as time goes on, have a little bit more money to spend by virtue of not spending last January, just kind of coming into a situation that difficult and having the patience and the long-sightedness not to panic, even though it might come with short-term pain and with a lot of pressure on him at the time, looks really, really impressive in hindsight.
Yeah, David, this is making me think, actually. And, you know, Patrick, you mentioned it earlier, you know, all the managers that have come before, Martinez, Koeman, Allardyce, Silva, Ancelotti, Benitez, Lampard. I mean, there's a whole heap of managers. You've sort of landed on the perfect person for the situation that Everton are in Sean Dyche. Look at what he was doing at Burnley with very little money. It's a really interesting one because actually when you do strip it back, this is just a clear plan from a clear guy who wants to get the best out of his players, which is kind of what Everton need considering all the moving parts elsewhere.
There are some managers who don't like to be lavished with expensive players because, one, that has a detrimental effect on your finances, and two, it comes with huge expectations. And so, in a way, Burnley were always the underdog. They were expected to go down or struggle. They found a style of football that suited them, their players, horses for courses. I don't think it's massively rocket science. However, many get it wrong and they're maybe a bit too ambitious in their style of play and their recruitment. And Dyche's record is beyond reproach, to be honest. You could only maybe pick him up on style of play. And it did get a bit fractious towards the end of his time at Burnley. My mind casts back to a post-match interview he did when Burnley were beaten at Manchester City during the lockdown period, and also Ben Mee spoke very vociferously too. I think Burnley struggled to put a team out that day and were needing reinforcement. So it wasn't all singing and dancing behind the scenes at all times. But I don't think Sean Dyche needs a lot to be content. When he came into Everton last season, it was a bit of a mess. And yet he sort of seems to have hunkered down with Kevin Thirlwell and Dan Purdy, a small number of people. Obviously, the board were not even coming to matches. So they're pretty much running the club. And maybe that's the way Sean Dyche likes it, you know, control of as much as he can. And those that are playing for him, you know, he seems to have quite a defined recruitment style for a start. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot of working out, you know, very physically robust, but high level technical players. But maybe it's just not the most eye catching style of play, but it's really efficient. And if you did change his name, as Paddy says, I think he would definitely get a lot more credit. And it's one of these managers that you just don't want to play against. You know, it's going to come at you in a really difficult way. And I think it's a couple of tough matches. Is it Spurs and Manchester City coming up? They're not going to be relishing the visit of Everton or vice versa. And also the momentum and the confidence that Everton are playing with now. It's almost like the shackles are off. There's nothing to lose, but they're extremely well set up. And it's not just as simple as having a relegation specialist. You know, Sam Allardyce was at the club. It didn't work out. But maybe the right man at the right time and Dyche with a point to prove. I was at his news conference after the Bournemouth game. Paddy was there too. Final day of the season, survived by the skin of their teeth. And he wasn't a happy man. You know, he knew the work that needed to be done. He knew the carnage he'd kind of walked into.
It's been very difficult, but the positive side is we've got the job done. The players have played their part without doubt. I came in here to change a mentality. I think there's been signs of that, still more to go. And overridingly, I said to the players, I said, look, we shouldn't be here. So I said, look, joy is today and enjoy it and you've earned it. But at the end of the day, it's got to change. There's no point in sitting on it already and going, well, like, look how great we are. Because it's not like that. There's loads to change here and a lot of work to be done. But a big step to make sure, you know, we secure it.
He's the sort of man that uses all the resources available to him to the maximum, the time on the training pitch, his assistants around him. Ian Wone's got a good reputation too. And it's actually a really pleasing story. And, you know, Everton supporters have maybe been sold the dream of this European football and high-profile signings and glamorous managers. And beneath their feet, they were sort of hemorrhaging the club's future and existence by, yeah, great ambition, but pretty reckless decision making. And the stadium was on the way, and it's like, we're going to challenge the biggest guns in Premier League and European football. But perhaps there's just a little bit of realism now that was much needed. They're not out of the woods yet financially by any means. And we got confirmation last week that the stadium's going to open the season after next. And that just gives them a little bit more time to sort of, for the first time in years, build a thorough and proper foundation to try and create a sustainable future. It's badly needed at Everton.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwole.
I don't think a lot of people realise just how much Sean Dyche does with players, like in terms of getting the best out of them. I was recently with Aaron Lennon, and obviously he went through his mental health battles at Burnley. And he said to me, it's like, people don't realise about Sean Dyche. Like, he'd literally just text me randomly and just be like, mate, are you okay? And you don't realize just how powerful that is when you're a player at a new team in terms of being integrated or feeling part of it. I feel like that's part of his strengths that no one really talks about, is how he connects with human beings to get the best out of them.
Yeah, I don't think that's spoken about anywhere near enough when it comes to Sean Dyche. Again, going back to what people perceive him to be versus the reality. And I know from doing a piece on the recent turnaround in fortunes on the pitch, quite a lot of what people were saying from inside the club was that he really does put an arm around the shoulder of players. And there was a perception of him at times, particularly over the handling of Patrick Bamford when he came in on loan at Burnley, that he was quite a tough manager to work under. And he is very demanding of his players. And maybe he's looked at that issue with Patrick Bamford and maybe moved on in his own style. But there's an awful lot of innovative stuff here. I mean, I went away with the squad on the pre-season tour of Evian in France. And they had a psychologist on site that Dyche has used from his time at Burnley, a guy called Simon Clarkson. And he was doing sessions with players in the evening. So they would do double sessions out in searing heat in the middle of the French-Swiss Alps during the day. And then they'd go and do something like that, or there would be a team bonding exercise. As I understand it, he encourages players to be pretty open about their lives in general. It's not just how are you feeling on a football pitch, but it's, well, is there anything going on I need to know about? Do you want to speak to me about it? Do you want to speak to your players about it? They're encouraged to be together. And one of the most striking things from recent weeks has been that they have had injuries and they have needed fringe players, as you might call them, to step in and step up. And when those players have made an impact, it's quite clear that there's a camaraderie here, that the rest of the teammates are delighted for them. Lewis Dobbin, a youngster from the academy, he scored his first Premier League goal against Chelsea after coming on as a sub. If you watch the celebration back, every single outfield teammate goes up to him to celebrate with him. And maybe that's a small thing, but the message that's come back throughout is that the camaraderie has grown. Dyche has fostered that sense of spirit. And part of what you're seeing now on the pitch is a group of players that are just really working hard for each other and putting that graft in. So I do think it's right. I think there's an awful lot more that goes on behind the scenes with Dyche than people give him credit for.
We talk about kind of all these complex tactical things. And at the heart of Everton at the moment, lots of it is you want to get Dominic Calvert-Lewin fit, firing, and that's something managers haven't been able to do for a couple of years. And Calvert-Lewin's spoken about the kind of difficulties that's had on him mentally, not quite being able to get himself quite right, getting back and having a new issue crop up. And Dyche has been very good at, while lots of other coaches might have been, let's get him back, let's get him playing, at the start of the season, he was very, very careful about reintegrating Calvert-Lewin, about giving him support, but really about genuinely putting players' welfare first. It's talked about as a bit of thing, but this, I think, was a real example of it in action. And now he's back in form. I think although the goals haven't necessarily come, the underlying statistics are right up there, the best of Calvert-Lewin's career. And it's just, I think, just one example, along with the Dele situation, of just how impressive Dyche has been.
I was going to mention Dele because it's been quite interesting to see the work that's gone into improving Dele, getting him back to a position where he's able to kind of reintegrate with the squad. He's now back in training with players. But Dyche spoke of a conversation he'd had with Dele and the rest of the squad where they were addressing the issue of direct football. He said that Dele had effectively been the one to explain it to the rest of the squad. And he said it's not direct football in the sense of banging long balls up to a target man for 90 minutes. But Dele had compared it to his time with Pochettino at Tottenham, where direct football was a proxy for play forward, play aggressively, break the lines with your passes, whether it be in the air or on the ground. And Dele had almost taken on a role of teacher as a mentor within the Everton squad, explaining some of these principles on behalf of Dyche. So there is that element there. And I do think you go back to Aaron Lennon, you talk about Dele's mental health. I've mentioned Simon Clarkson coming in as a psychologist. I think Dyche's mantra is, and his sense is that if you tap into what makes players tick off the pitch, and you make sure that the kind of well-being is taken care of, then you're going to get better performances when they set foot on the field. And you're seeing that with Calvert-Lewin. Hopefully we will see that with Dele, and that kind of redemption arc continues.
Well, David, let's talk about Everton and the profitability and sustainability part of things. You know, they've been docked 10 points. Could there be any further repercussions? Because only a few weeks ago, we were talking about clubs in crisis, and Everton were one of those clubs.
Yeah, there is the potential for legal action by the teams who may have suffered as a result of the breach Everton were found to have committed. So you're talking about the likes of Leicester City, Leeds United, Burnley. And let's see, there was a deadline of 28 days after the news of Everton's punishment for those teams to claim. I don't know if that's still the case or whether it gets extended, whether the clubs have been speaking. We don't have any sort of update on that, but we'll have to wait and see. In terms of the breach itself, Everton's appeal has gone in, and so let's see if they get it reduced in any way, which will be their aim. They'd like to get it wiped out. They're doing a good job of wiping it out regardless, but it's not a laughing matter to them because points mean money and prestige and European qualification. So they feel they should be up there and benefiting from the higher position without this points deduction. Let's see how that plays out. In terms of going forward, they're FFP compliant to our understanding for the next round of PSR, which is what it's called now. And so certainly on the football side, because they've cut their cloth accordingly, Paddy talks of how many of the deals they've done have been sort of backloaded. So the payment will come later. And that's credit to Kevin Thirlwell and the sporting team who have negotiated those deals. That means in January, whatever maneuverability they have, I do think it will be very limited again. Maybe look for some loans or extremely low cost deals or back-ended deals again. But the sounds, the noises that we're getting that they are compliant going forward will fill the fan base with encouragement at what's been a really difficult time. There have been reports of potential administration. We don't know that to be the case at all. It's not been mentioned in the conversations that we've had with our contacts. Of course, there's like doomsday scenarios for all clubs, and Everton are in a really sticky situation. But I think a bit of reassurance to the supporters is that hopefully for their sake, Everton are sort of through the worst of it now, and they can actually build forward. There is the big issue of the proposed takeover by 777. We still have no clarity on whether they are to be approved by the Premier League, the FA, the Financial Conduct Authority. Again, a lot of reporting and speculation around potential rejection of that under the owners and directors tests or problems. But all we know is that Everton and 777 remain confident that it's on track and that they are going to get this through. That said, it's not their decision. And so that is a huge moment on the horizon, because if it's not 777, who are investing significant money into the club, I mean, Paddy's reported it's around £100 million now in loans, unsecured loans that's gone into the club. That shows that Everton are having problems generating their own money to run the club. But they will be sort of optimistic that they're in an okay state and that they will improve going forward.
I think one of the ironies going back to the points deduction was that this is called Premier League's profitability and sustainability rules. It was brought in an attempt to make sure that clubs ran themselves sustainably, made the right sorts of decisions. But Everton's punishment is in essence a double punishment. You have a points deduction, but what does that mean in terms of Premier League prize money? I mean, well, I think from this year moving forwards, it's worth about $3 million a place. The difference between Everton finishing, say, 10th or 16th is close to £20 million in prize money. Is somebody going to be knocking at Everton's door in for the 23-24 accounts, which will be published in future years, and saying, well, you're £20 million short here? It is both a points deduction and also a fine by virtue of the lost revenue. So that strikes me as ironic, given that we're talking about profitability and sustainability here. David Cole's right to mention that Everton aren't out of the woods financially in any sense. They need a takeover to go through, whether it's 777 or somebody else, because Farhad Moshiri is no longer able or willing to fund the club's losses. And they do run at a loss every year as it stands. I don't think we're expecting any clarity now on 777. It'd be a surprise if there was any clarity before the end of this year. So that will drag on into the new year, we expect. And that's going to be very important, because how do you, when you're planning for a January transfer window, how do you deal with this sense of uncertainty? You can't make any big, extravagant purchases, even if the money is there, and it isn't an Everton's case. So I think the sooner that comes, the better, because it allows other people at the club to respond and I suppose adapt accordingly. Maybe this just goes to show, with all the off-field issues we've spoken about, again, goes to show what a great job the current incumbents of the club are doing right now, the footballing staff in particular, are kind of blanking out all the noise, as Sean Dyche so often puts it, and getting the team on the pitch to a position where they're able to compete as well as they have done. That seems to me to be the big triumph here for Everton, that with all this nonsense going on elsewhere, financially and otherwise, the team is almost thriving.
Yeah, you finished it perfectly for me. That's a good way to end the pod today. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time. Paddy, Jacob, and also David as well. Please remember to rate and review this podcast if you're enjoying it. And also, before I forget, the Daily Football Briefing will have the reaction to the Champions League draw that happened today. That's going to be first thing on Tuesday, so make sure you tune into that. All right, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beale. The executive producer was AD Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic Football podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places. The Athletic Football Podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.